にゃにゃにゃラジオ。
Hi everyone, this is にゃにゃにゃ Radio. I am your host Yuzu. I am a junior web developer. Am I? I'm a software developer, and this podcast is to show you the engineering world, what it looks like, and what's like to be an engineer. So today I have a guest, amazing guest, Caitlin.
Yay. Hi everyone.
Can you introduce yourself, quickly?
Sure thing. I'm Caitlin. I'm a computer scientist from New Zealand, and I'm researching computer science education in primary schools.
Right. Yeah, great.
And awesome. All that stuff.
Okay, great. So yeah, we're now in Seoul to attend the Women Tech Makers Scholarship Retreat. So yeah, that scholarship is for female students in computer science field.
Who've
right?
shown leadership in getting more women into the field.
Yeah, exactly. To empower more women to get into the field. And I was a scholar last year. And Caitlin was a scholar from
2014.
Right, 3 years ago. And we're like all stars. We're like coming back to the scholars again.
It's so exciting.
I know, it's so exciting. Yeah. So we did a panel yesterday as a like former scholars, like what we have been doing after we got a scholarship. So that's why we are here. And we met like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And we got along, so that's why we're recording together today.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. And now I have to visit Japan and you have to visit New Zealand.
You should, and I should too. Okay. So I did an activity yesterday in the retreat actually with other scholars.
Oh yeah.
And there was this one I kinda wanna do with you. Okay. So pick three adjectives to describe each other.
Like, describe you?
Yeah. So I'll pick yours, and you pick mine.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And really...
Oh! Yeah. Okay.
Who's going first?
Okay, I wanna go first.
Okay.
Caitlin is... inspirational. I have five options, and now I'm, like, picking three.
Okay. Well, I feel like now I wanna say inspirational as well.
Okay, inspirational, funny, quirky.
Oh, I like those. I like those a lot. Okay. I want to use inspirational as well, but I need to think of a different one now.
Yeah, you're a native speaker, so think of synonyms.
I should have like more adjectives I can choose from and better.
Yeah.
I want to say really, really fun I'm gonna get too many now. Really motivated.
Oh yeah.
And this is hard.
I know, right? It's hard. It's fun.
No. I'm gonna do inspiring, and if I think of a better one later, I'm gonna come back.
Okay, gotcha. I wanted to add intellectual too though. To describe you. Like not many people do PhD, you know? You're like awesome, you know?
I feel slightly like it's a lot of admin work a lot of the time, but it is really fun. Doing the research is like...
Yeah, tell me about it. Like, So Caitlin is currently doing in New Zealand, you're doing a PhD, right?
Yeah.
In computer science education.
Yes.
Yeah, can you tell me more about it? Like, what your lifestyle looks like?
Yeah.
Like, what your research is about?
So, PhD lifestyle is quite variable.
Right.
You go through periods of... really intense work and really like being really excited about your research and it's really exciting and you want to write papers, and then you go through periods where you're sort of like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Interesting.
But that's when you have like good supervisors to help you.
Right.
But the research, I come from a computer science background, so I did my degree and came into education afterwards, and like I really like teaching, but I've never done any education training. So I've been working heaps with primary school teachers who actually know what they're doing when they're teaching this stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like computer science education is like now it's a really important topic, but I have never heard of the research, you know? Like I didn't even know the research really existed.
So it's
really great to know.
Yeah, I'm so glad that more people are hearing about it.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because I would say maybe at the beginning of my PhD, maybe a few years before that, there was hardly any. It was really not much happening.
Right.
But now there's so much. Like, it's really exploded. Like, particularly researching this thing called computational thinking.
Mm.
So at first I was like, yay, I'm doing a really new area, and now heaps of people are doing it. But that's really good.
But you're like a frontier,
I like to hope so.
Yeah. So what exactly is computational thinking? Is it like thinking like a computer?
Good question. A lot of people, thinking like a computer is kind of the first thing people think, but it's slightly different. A really short description would be thinking like a computer scientist, but it's not quite. It's, we say it's a collection of different problem-solving skills, and they're the kind of problem-solving skills that help you create solutions that are algorithms or processes so that your solutions can be implemented on computers.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of about learning how you can use computers to create cool stuff.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
So the problem setting, so what kind of problems are the material? Like, is it gonna be a programming problem?
There is programming in it, so programming, we find, is like one of the really good ways to teach it. Not just programming, you need other stuff, but programming is really good for students. There's like a range of skills we kind of divide into computational thinking, and one of them is algorithmic thinking, which programming is so good for, because you have to learn to be like sequential and learn those strategies. And then there's logic, which again, you got to think logically for programming, and debugging's a huge part of that. And then there's elements called, there's abstraction, so kind of being able to, like, take, and generalization, so it's taking a solution to a problem and kind of making it more abstract, so hiding some of the details, so then you can create a general version that solves other similar problems.
Oh my gosh, I really love your approach.
I
started to learn computer science like pretty late in my life, like 3 years ago actually. After that, I feel like my thinking has changed so much.
Yes.
But I couldn't really like put that into words. It's really hard to like describe what has changed.
I know
but
what you
mean. But
now
I feel like you described.
Oh yay!
Yeah.
That's really awesome to hear, because I've been studying computational thinking for like a year and a half and I still struggle to just explain it. But yeah, it's so many people you talk to who are computer scientists or software engineers, or generally people who've just done quite a bit of programming in some computer science, when you, even though you can't describe it, they get what you mean. They're like, I think like that.
Yeah, it's a shift. Exactly. I'm so excited that you're doing the research into it.
It's so interesting. And one of the best moments I've had was the first teacher I started working with, like, it was great because she was kind of like, she was comfortable using technology, so she wasn't too scared, but she was like, oh, I can never do computer science or programming. Like, I'll learn a little bit so I can teach it, but I'm never going to really understand it. And when I talked to her about 6 months ago, so like 3 years after she started teaching it, she said, oh, so you've been talking about this computational thinking and like the programming thinking style. And I always kind of thought, like, I said the same thing and I thought it was just talk, but now I can do it. And she was like, I'm a computational thinker
now. Whoa, that's awesome.
It was so cool.
That sounds awesome. Oh my god.
Oh, that was one of the best moments.
Yeah, so I love how you like extract the like kind of like a social aspect of computer science, you know? Like, yeah, I feel like computer science is like affecting my like social life or like life as well, like my life attitude.
Yeah.
So you're extracting that element from computer science is awesome.
So I can't claim all the credit for like abstracting it at all. There's quite a lot of people working on the computer science, but the stuff we've been doing in schools, we see that. And I feel exactly the same way.
Yeah.
I approach problems in general
in
my whole life with that kind of mindset. Talking to other computer scientists, it's really funny because they do as well.
And you're doing this CS Unplugged, Computer Science Unplugged activity. Like, it's based on the same kind of theory or, like, the mindset, right?
Yes, exactly. It was, when it was first created, about 25 years ago. It was kind of before the idea of computational thinking was around, so it was much more 25 about...
25 years ago, that's a while ago.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. So Computer Science Unplugged is an activity or movement to teach computer science mainly for kids, but not only for kids, without computers. So without using computers, teach computer science.
Exactly.
So that's the idea, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's, I really like that you described it as a movement, because that's so true. It's kind of spread around the world.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I feel.
Like, we don't own it. Like, my supervisor was kind of the first person who came up with
That's crazy.
But I know, right?
Whoa.
And I'm like, how do I work with this famous person? But it's really spread, and people create their own versions.
Right.
And it's really cool. But now that we're looking at it, now like 25 years down the track, we're like, this teaches computational thinking, which is really exciting. You see those elements coming through, which is fantastic, because like they weren't designed with that intention.
Right.
We've reworked them now to try and emphasize that, but it's really exciting to be like, oh, this existed even then.
Yeah, exactly.
This is something that people kind of discovered. And most of the teachers we're working with are ones who were kind of, they were already comfortable with using computers. Not all of them. Some of them were still, like, scared of technology and kind of like, oh, computers. But most of them were into it, and they were really determined to learn this stuff. They were very, like...
So, to be clear, so you're teaching not only kids, but also teachers. So now you're focusing on teachers to teach Computer Science Unplugged.
Yes.
So it's like a meta thing going on. It's kind of complicated, but go ahead.
We're trying to like teach the teachers to teach.
Right.
But now what we're trying to move, this is more what I'll look at, what the rest of my team is looking at. I'm still focusing on teaching teachers and the
teaching
kids.
Teachers,
yeah, because that's going to be my research. But the rest of our team who don't have to write PhDs, now they're looking at teaching teachers so that they can teach other teachers to
another
teach
level.
Yes!
Another level introduced.
It's so good! But,
that's funny.
It's so funny. But, our teachers that I've worked with are really motivated and, like, not... They're kind of scared, but they're really like, yeah, I want to learn. But there's so many teachers, like, across New Zealand and across a lot of the world who've never seen this and are really scared of it or really, like, I don't want to do this.
Oh.
Yeah, so getting them feeling comfortable with it and it's going to be a big challenge.
Even make them want to learn that then? Like, how do you pull them into the field?
It's really, that's a really, like, big problem people are facing.
Yeah, sounds like so.
Yeah. So one of the things I did when I recently interviewed a bunch of the teachers was, I asked them, what do you think, because we're introducing it to the full New Zealand curriculum next year. And I was like, well, when that happens, what impact do you think that might have? And quite a few of them were talking about some of the older teachers and saying, like, we think a lot of them are going to, like, quit because they're going to be too scared of doing this.
So, you mean teachers?
Yeah.
They'll be scared. Oh,
and
sad.
Yeah, which is really frustrating. Or there'll be, like, quite a lot of resistance or people... Like, when it's something new, you expect people to question it.
That's
true. Yeah, but there
that's
is...
true in general.
Yeah. So it's gonna... Up until now, it's been very much like, oh, come do it, it's exciting. And some people are like, yeah, I'll do that. And others are just like, no, not listening. But now they're kind of forced to do it.
But, like, if you look at the actual activities that you do, it's not, like, scary at all. Can you name some of the activities that you
sure.
do? So yesterday, we did the paper plane activity.
Oh, I love that activity.
Yeah.
So we did this activity, which it's not an official Unplugged activity yet, but official on our website, but it's one that other groups of people do. But I want to put it on our website.
You should.
It was
because
so fun.
Because that was so much fun. And also it was really, it introduced a lot of like, important aspects of computer science too, like parallelism.
I can't say that word. Parallel processing.
Let's go with that. And also agile development.
And when I first got taught that activity, I was like, this is genius, but I'm so glad it came across when we did it. So the paper planes activity is software engineering unplugged, so it's like working in teams and having to learn to be agile and satisfy requirements and also not overcomplicate things, that kind of thing. But some of my other favorite activities is teaching binary numbers, where you get them to like flip big cards.
Oh, yeah, that was fun too.
Oh, it's so much fun. And there's another one that I really like, which is doing learning binary search and hash tables.
Whoa, that's a buzz. Yes.
I know, right?
I can tune and learn that.
They learn it with pirates and pirate chests.
Oh.
Yeah. And they have to look for, like, the pirate gold.
That sounds genius.
Oh, I love it.
Wow.
But one of the biggest things we like to focus on is we don't go into class and be like, today we're going to teach you binary search and hash tables. We go on and like, today we're going to learn about, today we're going to do a pirate's game.
Yeah.
Or today we're going to do magic tricks. And you never tell kids the answers. You never tell them this is how it works. You prompt them to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the binary numbers, when it's like, you give them a card that says one on it. You're like, what do you think the next one says? And they all say two. And then you go, what do you think the next one is? And they all say three. And you're like, haha, it's a four.
Right.
And they have to figure out the pattern.
Right.
Yeah,
I love how you ran the workshop. Like, you were like such an expert. Like, you didn't give them an answer.
Mm.
And you just like make them say it.
I really like that philosophy because it makes people feel like empowered. They're like, oh, yeah, I can figure it out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because computer science is such a like difficult field, or like people see it as like a difficult field.
Yeah.
So people just like get like scared, but if they can understand it by themselves, that'll be really empowering.
Oh yeah, and it's so true that people see it as this really difficult field. Like I find it really similar to when people are like, oh, I just can't do maths.
Mm.
But so often it's because they like had a bad experience or they had a parent who was like, oh, I can't do maths, and they're like, oh, okay, I guess it's okay, and I probably can't do it either.
Right.
Whereas it's not that they can't do it, it's just that like they just think they can't do it. And they put up a wall.
Right. Yeah. Mental wall.
Yes, exactly. But it's so bad because so many of the primary school teachers feel like that too.
Oh,
yeah.
Teachers?
Yeah, which is, it's quite, I'm not sure, I've got some theories about why it's more common with primary teachers, and part of it, in New Zealand, there's kind of like, we have the gender problem in computer science, we have a massive gender problem in teaching, particularly primary school, where about 90% of teachers are women.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh, I don't, I wonder if it's true for Japanese schools too.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out.
I don't think the number is that high though. Mm. Yeah.
That is like me kind of guessing, but
still.
Yeah, particularly primary school, and I mean there's heaps of reasons, and then that also kind of ties into like societal pressures and societal expectations that like women aren't as good as maths.
Mm.
Means a lot of those teachers have kind of come from that background of like, oh, I can't do maths.
Yeah.
And if your teacher has that attitude, it kind of rubs off on the kids.
That's true.
Yeah. So, but with the computer science unplugged and some of the programming, teachers have been like, oh, their maths is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yes. I'm like, we're sneakily teaching them maths.
You're like making such a great social impact.
Oh, thank you.
Oh my gosh, I'm so inspired now.
Oh, thank you. I
might do something like that too.
Oh, you should. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I should. Definitely.
And we want this to happen everywhere.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the idea, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a movement. Yeah, I definitely want to do it too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, talking about you, like, you decided to do a computational thinking research or like computer science education research like over computer science itself.
Yeah.
So what was your like decision like? Like, why did you choose that education side of computer science?
Oh, at first it was kind of just, I just happened to fall into it. When I did my honours year, I needed a project. And I originally wanted to do machine learning, and I talked to the supervisor, and he was like, oh, cool, like, I have this project. And then I went to talk to him again 2 weeks later, and he was like, oh, no, I gave it away. I can't give you the project. And I was like, But I was doing a computer science education course that semester, so I was like, oh, I'll go talk to the guy that runs that.
Oh, so you just happened to
be in it. Exactly. And I went and talked to him, and I was like, oh my god, I love this, and I really enjoyed it, and I could see the impact, so It was a really hard choice, though, because... Mm-hmm. And it was a hard choice because it tied into my imposter syndrome stuff. Mm. Like, it... There's a real big stereotype around, like... Like, with there being heaps of women in teaching, like, yeah. Oh, it's the woman's career.
Right, right.
And so I kind of had that complex, like, oh, I don't want to do it because then people will think I'm just doing it because I'm not good enough at computer science.
Ah, oh, yeah, no.
Which was so upsetting. But I was like...
Yeah, I can totally see people say that. Yeah. Oh, no, that sucks.
And it's like, even if they're not saying it to your face, I just had this idea in my head that, right. like, people would think that. But... And every now and then, mm-hmm. I struggle with that now, but I don't generally because I decided to keep going with the education stuff because I was enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, I've enjoyed doing some research and writing about it,
mm-hmm.
and I think this is important. So, oh, and my supervisor's really cool, so right. I'll stay and try and do more and see what it's like.
Right, right, right.
And most of the time, I love it. Every yeah. now and then, I get kind of like, oh, I'm not sure. But also... I mean, I'm kind of reassured in the sense that now I feel like my understanding of the fundamentals of computer science is so rock solid, even though I'm really out of practice with programming. And also, like, there's a lot of teachers in my family, mm-hmm. and it's kind of, I have always enjoyed teaching.
Gotcha.
Like, I kind of tutored my friends at school sometimes.
Mm.
I did some tutoring at uni and some lecturing, and it was just really fun.
I see. So you're kind of familiar yeah. with the teaching field.
Yeah, oh, sort of.
I see.
But I've kind of, like, learnt by trying it.
Oh,
so.
That's awesome.
But also, my supervisor, Tim Bell, has been very... good at, like, giving me feedback on it and being like, hey, I find this works well and this doesn't. And
that sounds like a great environment to be in.
Yeah, it's a really supportive... Our research group is incredibly supportive.
I see. Yeah, I think it's really... how can I say? Like, really giving to focus on education.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I mean... I want to do something about education too,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I want to invest in myself as well.
Oh, yeah,
like,
definitely.
As a software engineer. Mm-hmm. So, like, I really admire you, like, what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Like, you're making a big impact to the world.
Well, but you'll be making a huge impact as well, working on the kind of products you'll
yeah,
be doing.
That's true.
You're impacting millions of people with that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes me feel good too.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with, like, working on your career at the same time, because that's important too. And maybe the more you work on it, the more, like, good you can do in the future.
That's true.
It's crazy how it's one of the differences that we really see with, like, software and technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can impact so many people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's the, like, core beauty of, like, engineering, you know?
Mm.
Like, we couldn't do it, like, back then, but now we can, like, impact, like, billions of people.
Exactly.
In a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, so beautiful, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and it is beautiful, and it's just the fact that you can improve people's lives,
mm-hmm.
like,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, I do see the beauty in it. And that's why I am in software engineering field. But at the same time, I sometimes feel like... Only sometimes. But I sometimes feel, like, kind of powerless in a way. Like, especially when I'm working on a huge project, like, I do get to decide things. But at the same time, it's, like, really tiny portion of the project. So, like, even though I can... I try to be creative. Is it creative? So that's the question I constantly have to myself. Although, like, I try to think that I am contributing to the world. But, yeah, that's, like, the thing I think about all the time.
I think I know what you mean in terms of, like, sometimes, like, the technology, or just the big companies in general... sometimes you feel like a small cog in a big machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is... And it's interesting because I sometimes feel a bit like that in research, but not in the same way. Sometimes it's more kind of like, there are people out there doing so much more than me. But you can't create big technology that impacts millions of people by yourself.
Right, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Very few people can do that. And generally, at some stage, they need to hire more people to work with them.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's, and having each person's, like... separate viewpoint improves it in some way. Like, even if it's even if each person is kind of making small contributions, it's still going to be changing it and molding the project.
Yeah.
But at the same time, sometimes, I guess that's why so many people go off and do startups, because...
Mm. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Because you have more control.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I guess...
At one time, like, one of my friends who is not in tech, like, mm-hmm. she asked me, like, people say that, like, you can use your creativity in computer mm-hmm. science field. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, like, not completely sure about, like, if I'm being creative mm-hmm. in the workplace. I guess to some extent,
mm-hmm.
but not to the extent of, like, artists or anything.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's something I struggled with in my head because I, like... Doing creativity in terms of, like, art and stuff is something mm-hmm. I really love as well, although I need to put aside more time for it, because it makes me happy.
Yeah, me too, yeah. Absolutely. I love art.
Like, what kind of art do you do?
I write.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I used to do painting all the time, and I just don't anymore. I really need to start doing it again. But, yeah, I used to kind of be like, oh, no, there is heaps of creativity mm-hmm. in computer science. Like, you have to come up with ideas for a lot of stuff. But... sometimes I think there is, either there's not as much or it's a different kind of creativity in a sense.
Yeah,
like, is it more problem solving?
Yeah,
is
that, it, yeah, totally.
Mm. But I guess sometimes you have to come up with really, like, innovative solutions.
Mm, that's true, true. Yeah, so I feel like, so when you're creating art, mm-hmm. you're, like, creating this, like, beauty from scratch, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm working on a huge project, I'm working on a small portion of it, I'm mm-hmm. more, like... polishing the beauty, the existing beauty, kind of.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, in a creative way, hopefully.
Yeah. I wonder if you were starting, like, if you were on a team, even if it was a big one, starting a brand new project, if
that's
it would
possible.
Feel different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm, like, just, I just started working, so mm-hmm. maybe that will change.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm. Mm, and maybe it's, like, you... because some people, I'm sure, don't want to get to that point of doing the really, like, innovative creative. They're very happy just kind of contributing in those ways.
Yeah.
And, but if you're interested in that, like, I think one of the other women here was talking about how she was, like, the project lead for her, or the tech lead for her project, so she kind of has a lot more control over where it goes and the ideas for it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I want to reach that point.
Yeah!
Yeah.
Which is, and... not many people have the ability to do that.
That's true.
But also, like, having that other creativity side, mm-hmm. like, holy... I shouldn't swear. That must make such a difference in how you can approach the work.
Yeah, that's what the diversity is all about, right? Like, people bring you new perspectives to the world. Yeah.
And there are so many connections between them. Actually, there was another scholar, one of the women tech makers who's on this retreat, who was showing me yesterday... some of the programming she shows art students at her uni about how you can create art with programming. I forgot about that. Yeah, it's really cool.
That's awesome.
Mm. And then there's heaps of different stuff, like doing e-textiles where you're making clothing or just other kinds of like fabric stuff, which is also has technology integrated into it.
Mm.
And people create art using the technology. And
that would be awesome.
Yeah. Although, actually, thinking about it, a lot of the bits where you kind of see some computer science, where you see some of the concepts, and you're like, oh, that's so beautiful, and, like, some of it is just beautiful, but it's already there, I guess. So
exactly. It's like discovering the beauty instead of, like, creating itself.
Oh, I never thought about that before.
Yeah. So, yeah, in that sense, I sometimes feel a little bit powerless, like, compared to when I'm writing, you know?
Where you have complete control over it, it's kind of...
Exactly. But at the same time, like, even if I write a, like, masterpiece, I can only deliver it to, like, a certain number of people. Whereas I can contribute to, like, billions of people all the time with computer science.
Yeah.
So that's, like, a trade-off, you know?
And I guess it's also interesting because even if the writing is... accessing much fewer people, it's probably still having a strong impact on them.
It could change people's lives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, there are some books you read or even just some articles and it just changes the way you approach the work.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or so you feel connected.
Power. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I agree so much. I wish I was better at creative writing. Like, at school I was really into it, and now I'm like, nah.
I'd be interested in your writing.
Yeah. Oh, most of the time I just write when I'm, like, in a really bad mood and need to vent.
Stress out.
So it's very, like, angry.
That'd be funny.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, so I'm attracted to that, like, feel, too.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm still, like, figuring out, like, how to deal with those, like,
things. When you're writing, is it non-fiction or fiction?
Fiction. Yeah. Totally fiction.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, based on the real world, I write fictions, yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I know.
There you go.
I feel like we have so much in common.
I know, right?
Yeah.
This is so
wonderful. We were talking yesterday about mental health issues.
Yeah.
That's, like, one of my biggest interests, and yours too.
Oh, I'm so interested in it. I want to do more in that field.
Me
as well.
Too. Oh. But, like, I was, oh my gosh, in Japan, it's, like, so suppressing.
Yeah.
And you can't, it's not really, like, seen as a good thing to talk about, like, mental health issues out there. So, like, it's really hard to, like, even discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, I was really, really excited when a couple of other people kind of talked about it the other day.
Yeah,
you. Yeah, and I was like, oh, Yuzu. Like,
I know.
I was so like, oh, yay. Like, it's so awesome that someone else is like, I'm going to talk about this.
Yeah,
like,
I know, right?
I was so excited.
But it's
also hard, though, because sometimes there's always that concern that someone there is going to,
like,
judge.
Make a joke about you or, like, judge
Which,
you.
Like, I've had at uni, because, like, I have bipolar type 2, and I just remember, this was before I was diagnosed, but it was when I was diagnosed with depression, and I was talking to some other tutors, and we had been, like, informed that, from student services, like, oh, by the way, like, one of the students in your class has bipolar, so just, like, we get told when they have anything that could have a significant impact.
Okay.
With the student's consent, of course. And the other tutors were like, oh, what does that mean? That some days they're just going to be, like, laughing and happy and jumping around the lab, and some days they'll be sad, and we're laughing about it. And I was just, like, sitting.
Oh my god.
Makes me so angry.
That makes me so angry, too.
Mm.
Yeah, I was diagnosed as, okay, I'm trying to, I was trying to remember the name, the English name of it, but I just can't. But it's just, like, the separation.
Dissociation?
I guess that's it. You're there, but you're not actually there.
Yes! Yes!
Yeah, I have that sometimes.
They call it sometimes, like, you get dissociation, personalization.
Oh, yeah, that one. That one I was looking for.
Yeah.
Depersonalization.
It's so, I get it sometimes when I have anxiety, or sometimes when I'm what you call hypomanic, which is kind of like manic, like bipolar 1 is you get really depressed and you get really manic, which is like,
hyper?
Yeah, like very, like there's different kinds of types of it. Some people get really angry and some people get really, really happy.
I see.
When you have mania, generally you get a bit delusional and a bit kind of, but hypomania is like a slightly lower version of it, where you don't tend to lose your mind.
Interesting.
I find sometimes when I get anxiety, and sometimes when I'm hypermanic, I start getting that.
Yeah.
It's such a horrible feeling.
Oh yeah, for me it's like a really interesting feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it sometimes feels horrible, but it sometimes feels like almost artistic. Like, I am here, so, like, if you've never heard of the depersonalization, it's like, you're there, but at the same time, your feeling is not there.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind, your thinking is, like, in the whole different world.
Yeah.
Kind of. You're in a different world, almost, and it's really interesting feeling to get.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like being high, kind
of. Yeah, but kind of a... There was one way someone described it where it's kind of like you're looking through foggy glass.
Ah, exactly. Yes. That's what I feel. Yeah.
And it's, but actually, that I never thought about the connection with like the creativity or the like artistic side. That's so awesome.
Yeah, sometimes I get creativity from that experience, you know? Like,
yeah.
Even though you're like at the workplace, like looking at your code, you're just not there, you know?
Yeah.
You're just in some other, like, Western country or something.
Yeah.
like, drinking coffee.
Yeah.
It's, like, so random.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like when you talk to people who haven't experienced it, and probably some people who are listening to this, you might just be thinking, oh, well, that's just like when you're daydreaming. Mm. Everyone does that. Mm. But it is significantly different.
Yeah, it is.
It's a full disconnection from like who exactly. you are.
Yeah,
like you exactly. feel like your body isn't real.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's what I feel.
Mm.
Yeah. And yeah, when I was diagnosed, mm-hmm. now I'm like operating normally. Like, back then, like I was having issues because of mm. that, you know, I couldn't really live normally because yeah. of that. Like, even though like people talked to me, I was not really responding to mm. them. So yeah, that's kind of mm-hmm. the experience I had.
Yeah. And yeah. you get to like daydreaming, someone's like, hey, Yuzu, you can like snap out of it. I'm like, oh, sorry.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But when you're like that, you can't.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah. yeah. And also, like, especially for me, like, that daydreaming or like depersonalization was happening when something terrible was happening.
Yeah.
So I tried, I think I was trying to like unconsciously like depersonalize myself so that I don't get hurt.
Yes.
So yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think that's like healthy, you know?
No.
Like, because you're not in there to feel the pain, mm-hmm. but you are actually feeling the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're not there, like you're not like in the moment,
yeah,
you know?
Mm. Exactly, and it kind of damages you later.
Yeah, 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 exactly. So I don't think it's a healthy mm-hmm. thing. So.
It's not, but then it's like you can, there are coping strategies, like strategies you can learn, and in some cases medication, but it's not. It's like a defense mechanism
yeah,
your brain does,
exactly,
so it's
exactly.
not it's not something you can choose to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's something that sometimes happens to children when trauma has
right,
happened.
Right.
And it's like, and their brain kind of does it, and sometimes they can't even remember it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I like
reading about stuff.
Yeah, me too. I like reading about how those things started and
yes.
stuff.
I have a Google Scholar alert for like papers about bipolar
you have
too.
A Google yeah. Scholar alert. Oh my gosh, I should do that too.
It's so, I mean, half the, well, maybe like 3/4 of the things that come through are like, this chemical and this chemical and this protein
oh,
and sound
really, really hard to
yeah.
read.
And I'm like, I don't understand any of this. But then other ones are relevant and interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, so we are sharing this, like, passion of, like,
yeah.
mental issues and mental illness. And I feel like that's not, like, a coincidence, you know?
Mm.
Because mental health issues are so much of problem solving.
Yeah.
Like, we talked yesterday.
Mm. Oh, yeah. It's quite, like, it's so, like, there's different, like, sections of the population who are more, like, susceptible to this stuff.
Right,
and
right.
there is some stuff which is kind of scary about, like, depression is more common, I think, in people who are more observant about the world, maybe?
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a good
people,
word, observant.
Yeah,
yeah
and,
right.
like, people who can kind of more intuitively understand
right,
the world.
Right,
yeah,
right.
that sounds very like, ooh, we're so great, but it's kind of, it's, yeah, it's interesting, and
yeah.
it's so, I keep seeing it being so common in the uni students, which is so scary.
Even the mental diseases.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
For most of them, it's more just like, they're not, their mental well-being is really bad.
Mm-mm.
And some of them, like, it develops into mental illness.
Mm.
I mean, and then some people, it's just like, my bipolar was set off by very small things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really, like, genetically at risk of it. Like,
right.
my dad has major depressive disorder. My grandfather had bipolar.
Right.
Which we kind of only realized recently, which was interesting. And then, like, other people on my dad's side of the family have depression. Some people on my mum's side of the family have anxiety.
Mm.
So I was kind of...
Gotcha.
It was always going to
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, there are genetic reasons,
yeah.
right?
But then
yeah.
some people... You can have, like, a really small genetic... This is what the research currently says, so
mm-hmm.
I mean, it might change and not be accurate in the future, but
right.
at the moment it looks like people have different degrees of risk, just based on the way your brain is structured. So for some people, terrible things can happen to them, but they don't develop these. Like,
gotcha.
Obviously their life is still incredibly difficult, but it doesn't turn into the illness.
Gotcha.
But then other people, not much can happen. Like, I think my first depression was, like, a breakup, which is so, like, ugh.
Kind
but,
of common.
Yeah.
right.
It's, but, and you can have small things happen, and your life can be relatively good, but it sets off the illness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right, which is interesting. I can't remember. Oh, and that was why, like, some of the, like, that culture within uni that really a lot of people get anxiety and, or they, like, really stress themselves out. Mm-hmm. They don't sleep properly. They don't look after themselves. Right. It can, like, set it off.
Mm.
And once you've got it, it's like...
Forever, kind of. It's so scary, right?
Yeah,
I feel like, so people go to gym for, like, the health reasons.
Yeah.
I feel like people should go to counseling more.
Oh my god, I agree so much.
Yeah, to, like, have just the maintenance, you know? Even if you're not, like, sick or anything.
Yeah.
It's really, it feels really good to, like, have someone to talk to about your, like, mental issues. You have this, like, understanding of you with, like, which, like, you can't really get unless you go there, you know?
Oh, I agree so much. And it's, I think one of the things I heard someone describe recently is, like, cause, I mean, some people, I quite enjoy my therapy appointments most of the time because they make me feel good. but some people, it's kind of like, they view it more as a chore. But there's, like, one article I read was someone being, I don't go there because, like, it's, like, fun, but... I do it, it's like brushing my teeth.
Oh.
Like, I need it to keep myself healthy.
Exactly, yeah, that's
like,
what I thought.
Exactly, like going to the gym.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I feel like coping with mental illness or like thinking about mental health is like a problem solving.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you were doing the interesting program about it.
Oh yeah.
Connecting mental health issues and
computer science.
Oh, it's crazy.
It was so weird. I had this weird idea about it for like some things and I started talking to people about it and they're like, oh no, like I can see connections. So I originally wanted to turn it into like a workshop I could go out and do or a website, but then I'm pretty sure I got depressed, so I couldn't do
Let's do it. I mean, I'd be down. Like, I want to do it too.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, that's like something I wanted to do for such a long time, like connecting computer science and mental illness, but I was not sure how.
But there are connections. It's so interesting.
That's true.
Like, I mean, there's that kind of thing like, oh, your brain is a computer, which I mean, it isn't exactly, like, it's not a very perfect metaphor, but it, like in some ways it's similar.
Yeah.
Like, and the problem solving thing, I was just looking at it this morning. What was some of it? There was some really, because the way you approach your mental well-being, you have to kind of identify, you identify problems and then you look at solutions and there's some, the one I did was, like, it wasn't on, if you do this, your mental illness will be cured, because that's not how it works.
Yeah.
It was, these are things you can do to improve your mental well-being.
Right.
So there was things about how you deal with, like, mental bandwidth.
Mm,
yeah.
Mental bandwidth!
Yeah. Like, there's only so much information you
that's
can fit
so
in
true.
At once.
That's
yeah.
so true.
Otherwise, you start dropping packets.
Yeah! And you were talking about the intrusive thought. It's like a memory cache.
Yeah, like garbage? Like if you haven't got good garbage disposal in your code, then random, like
if there is memory leak.
Yes, exactly.
You start to get the intrusive thought.
Yeah, you get like intrusive thoughts coming in that are really negative or really scary, and sometimes you like want to obsess over them.
Right.
But it's sometimes you're just like, look, brains like do weird stuff sometimes.
Right,
like,
right.
I don't need to obsess over that or jump away from it. I'm trying to think of like some common. There's actually a form of OCD, which is about obsessing over those thoughts. Because one of the common ones I've read about is people, particularly when they're younger, and I'm sure it becomes less common in the future because people aren't. Well, people hopefully will become less homophobic as time comes on. There's a common one where people, particularly if they've been brought up thinking it's bad, will have random thoughts like, maybe I'm gay, or maybe I'm in love with this friend.
Right, if they are,
like, if they have a fight with someone, they'll be like, maybe it's because I want to do sexual things with them.
Right.
And then start obsessing over that, even though it's just kind of random thoughts.
Right.
Sorry, there's much better examples, but that's the only one I can really
think of.
But
I think that's something like most of the people have experienced, right?
Yeah,
like that kind of like random thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
It was one, it's strange. And then the mental bandwidth one, like if you've got too much going through, like your brain just gets overheated and you need to try and get some of those things out of your head.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm. And then the one I always like to tell people first is, like, if you're having... The first time I did it, I focused a lot on uni students. And I was like, if you're really struggling, if you're really anxious, if you're stuck on that assignment, have you tried turning it off and on again? Which isn't exactly computer science.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Oh my god, there's so much more I want to talk about, but
it's too.
Time to wrap up.
Oh no!
Yeah, I know. Oh my gosh. I really want to talk about more.
If I come visit Japan or if you come visit New Zealand, we should do more.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. We should do it. So yeah, so that's about it for today. So any final comments for, like, possible listeners? Like they might, have any comments?
I'm on the mental health train of thought now. So I would say anyone, of course, when you think you're struggling with mental illness, the best thing is to reach out. But just generally, if you're struggling in uni or in your job in terms of stress and anxiety, there are skills you can learn to help cope with it.
So true.
And also get enough sleep. That is always the best
thing. That's so true. That's
oh my god.
But it's like sometimes like not seen. Like people oversee it. Yeah,
exactly.
Sleep is so important.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's about it for today. Thank you so much, Caitlin. Yeah,
thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.